Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Good Friday evening. Malloy here on Nova M Radio Network. Boy, Friday again. That's about the only way I know it's Friday doing this kind of work is when Kathy plays that particular song. It's like, oh, it's not. It must be Friday. Hope you had a great week. Stick around. We have some unexplainable moments of comedy tonight. In reporting on some of the events that have been revealed in the past 24, 36 hours, a little bit of which we touched on last night, but it's just becoming screamingly funny, like a Marx Brothers movie. It is. I swear it is. The problem is, of course, overlaying all of this humor is death and destruction, but, you know, you take it as it comes, right? You don't laugh at the jokes you'd like to laugh at. You laugh at the jokes that you've got to laugh at. Now, wait a minute. That had to do about going to war with an army or something. Whatever happened to Donald Rumsfeld? The rats ate him. He's just gone, isn't he? Joining us next hour will be a writer and activist, Steve Rosenthal, who will update us on his latest research, along with Bob Fiturka. Why can I never say Bob's name? Bob and Stephen will update us on this last presidential stolen election, primarily what has happened in Ohio. This is astonishing. I read the article that they have got out right now. And you're not going to believe it. It has a direct tie-in to the off-premises email equipment that Rove and the rest of these bastards have been using. I'll try Bob's name again. Fitrakis. See, that's easy, Mike. Fitrakis. The article is at freepress.org. Excuse me, if you want to check it out before we get to the interview with Steven Rosenfeld. So stick around for that. Some of you might remember that Steve Rosenfeld, yeah, it's the same Steve Rosenfeld that was Laura Flanders' producer. I'm sorry. Rosenfeld was Laura Flanders' producer on Air America Radio until he was, you know, amicably separated from that program last winter. Oh, the things we could tell, huh? Also, we'll be playing some of our webmaster's CD, New Eye, Mark Marshall's New Eye, which is now available everywhere. Go to markmarshall.com for more information. But Steve Rosenfeld, who is based in San Francisco, will be joining us here a little bit later in the program. Okay. This is from Mike in San Francisco. Mike, dear Mike, you have a good show that is fun to listen to. However, the I am not a potted plant line, I attributed that last night to what's his name, Admiral Stockdale. That line was said by Oliver North's lawyer when the hearing committee complained about how much he, Oliver North's lawyer, was answering instead of Oliver North. That phrase, the phrase that got satirized for Stockdale was from his opening debate line, "Who am I? Why am I here?" Yeah, it's easy to get some of those mixed up, especially if you're as ditzy as I am. But there were five or six people who sent in the correct information on that, so thank you very much. There is a killer algae. This reads like something out of one of the supermarket tabloids, but it's from the Associated Press. A killer algae is haunting California shores. How about the headline, killer algae haunts California shores? No, this is for real. Another evidence of global warming, and this is how global warming or global heating is going to manifest as we get deeper and deeper into this. The pressure is really on for human beings to do something, but I certainly hope it happens. The Nation magazine, I think it's this issue, has a very clear explanation of what people can do to stop global warming. Anyway, a bloom of ocean algae that produces a toxic acid is floating from San Diego to San Francisco. It's killed hundreds of birds, sea lions, dolphins. In the past week, according to the AP, 40 birds have been taken to the International Bird Rescue Center in San Pedro with symptoms of domoic acid poisoning, which attacks the brain and causes seizures. In previous seasons, according to the director of this bird rescue center, they might see 7 birds a week, and it's up to 40. The director said, quote, "I've been doing this work for 35 years. I've never seen anything like this as far as the number of species affected other than an oil spill." Now, this acid apparently is produced by this microscopic algae. Birds and sea mammals eat it. They get the acid by eating fish and shellfish, who in turn eat the algae. This algae bloom happens every year as the ocean warms, but this year's bloom, here it comes, is early, extensive, and very, very thick, said biological sciences instructor at University of Southern California. This professor said, "In 5 years of study, I have not seen a bloom this large at this particular time of year. It's having an extraordinary impact on pelicans and other species. Thousands of animals are being affected." Yada, yada, yada. And so it goes. This is the kind of stuff, you know, they talk about algae blooms off the coast of California that's killing hundreds and hundreds of animals, just a spectrum of various species of animals. And that's one story. And then the ice melt in the Himalayas is another story. And the breaking up of the polar ice caps is another story. And you still have people like these right-wing Republicans in Congress, like Inhofe and Rohrabacher and the rest of these people, who insist, because Rush Limbaugh got inside their brains, squatted there, and left so much crap and garbage that these people can't think anymore. These members of Congress still insist nothing's happening. Nothing's happening. Doesn't mean a thing. Look over here. All the more reason to go to draftgore.com. Suzanne sent me an email right before the program. She says we're 20 away from 73,000 at draftgore.com. Okay, Suzanne. God. So go to draftgore.com. Please. 20 people, go there now. And as soon as it gets to 73,000, Suzanne will send me an email and we'll let you know. The more I think about Al Gore and what we're facing over the next 40 years, 50 years in this country, most of that time I won't be here. I'll be long dead and gone. But you, truth seeker, just might still be here. And your children, my children, your grandchildren, my grandchildren. But when I think what we're facing over the next 40 or 50 years, the planet, when I say we, I'm not talking about America or China or Iceland. I'm talking about we. What we're facing, we've got to have some leadership that understands it. You know, these 8 people who were on the stage last night, over here in South Carolina, the 8 Democratic candidates, or would-be candidates for the presidency, they have no earthly idea about it. Did it come up? Did it come up at all? I don't know. I didn't watch it. And there's a reason I don't watch that stuff. It's boilerplate rhetoric. I don't want to hear it. If I want to know the position of one of these candidates, I will go to his or her website, dig around, and find out what their position papers are. If they've got a record in the Senate or wherever, I'll check their record. I'll read some of their speeches, but I'm damn sure not going to watch them on television. That's a fool's errand. That's one of the reasons it was on MSNBC. Nobody cares, and nobody should care. Nobody should care. You get 8 people out there, for how long were they on? 90 minutes? Oh, give me a break. But all the more reason to get on the Al Gore pressure points for him to consider a run, because I don't know who else understands these issues to the extent that Al Gore does. And we're going to need this kind of leadership. I mean, we are. We just are. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Shining down like water. I won't know. Have you ever seen the rain? I won't know. Have you ever seen the rain? Coming down Sunday.
You know, we live in a global world, and that creates uncertainty in some. I understand that.
we live in a global world. You know, down in Guantanamo, where a series of Bush crime family representatives have stated categorically and repeatedly that we there warehouse the worst of the worst, where it concerns terrorists and people who eat human babies and just awful, awful, awful people. I don't know how many times Rumsfeld said it. I don't know how many times the sick, monstrous cyborg Cheney said it. But they've said it over and over again. Well, two more detainees at Guantanamo, one from Afghanistan, one from Morocco, have been freed. Authorities said yesterday they were allowed to leave after a military review of whether the prisoners have intelligence value or pose a threat to the U.S. Okay. The military does not provide details about these cases, you see. There have been 80 so far who have been deemed eligible for release. About 380 remain. The vast majority of those have been held for years without being charged. And with the kind of bald-faced, I want to say it, but I can't say it on the air. How can I say this? All right, I'll go to the Yiddish. With the kind of chutzpah that is just astonishing, stupefyingly bold, a Pentagon statement said, quote, "These transfers are a demonstration of the United States' desire not to hold detainees any longer than necessary." End quote. Oh, my God. Yeah, we only hold them for five years. Now. Don't charge them. Just torture them. Just diddle them around a little bit, torture them. And when we get bored, we send them home. George Tenet's all over the place today, isn't he? Huh? How about this? Now, the book was not supposed to be released till Monday, and the skinny is that Times reporters went to a bookstore that inadvertently had put it out in New York, and they bought a copy and read it and went, oh, my God. Which is bat snot, you know it as well as I do. Book tours and book publicity, especially a book like this, is absolutely crucial to get the buzz going. It is absolutely crucial to get the buzz going, and this is how the buzz starts. You get a couple of cooperating Times or Post or whatever reporters, and boom, here we go. But Cheney is the one who Tenet tries to behead. In this book, he doesn't go after the president, the fake president. As a matter of fact, Bush is portrayed personally in this book in a largely positive light. Tenet also has praise for Bush's leadership after the attacks on September 11, 2001. A line from the book says, quote, "He was absolutely in charge, determined and directed." End quote. Tenet also describes Bush as a blunt-spoken kindred spirit. Whatever the hell that means. That he cusses a lot? Hell, I'm blunt-spoken. So what? That doesn't make me president, does it? But Tenet really has some axes to grind. And, I've got mixed emotions about this. I'm glad to see a thug like this spill his guts. But he's only spilling his guts because, he got tweaked by His ego got tweaked by Rice and Cheney, and they're all blaming him now for this horrendous war. And Tenet was as much a part of it. He could have said any of this stuff anytime. Anytime. But I guess you wait until the pressure builds and you write a book. But he said that Cheney and other Bush administration officials pushed the country into war in Iraq without ever conducting what Tenet calls a, quote, serious debate, end quote, about whether Saddam Hussein even posed a threat to the U.S. All the rhetoric that was out there by Bush, according to an insider's insider, you can't get any closer to these murderous bastards than one of the murderous bastards himself, right? I mean, you can't get any closer. George Tenet, every time he moves, he slops because he is drenched in the blood of American soldiers and Iraqi civilians, just like these other people. When these people walk around the room, they squish. So what better source about the evil, sickening lies than from one of the evil, sickening liars? Hello? The book is titled At the Center of the Storm. Tenet says there was never a serious debate that I know of within the administration about the imminence of the Iraqi threat. He writes in what the PR flacks call a devastating judgment that is likely to be debated for many years. Nor, Tenet adds, quote, was there ever a significant discussion about the possibility of containing Iraq without an invasion? Remember how many times all of these rat bastards, starting from this contemptible, vile Wolfowitz to the silly shoe lady to Cheney, all of them, well, we tried every form of diplomacy we could. We have no choice now but to go commit murder. He says there was never a discussion about the possibility of containing Iraq without an invasion. Oh, there's more. There's more. And I'll share some of it with you. Again, what better way to get the truth about a blood-soaked venture like this than from one of the blood-soakies, right?
On this endless killing spree, how many kids can you kill?
After Secretary of State Powell's presentation to the United Nations Security Council, the world knows that Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction.
And Tenet says this lying bastard is a stand-up guy who, So former CIA chief George Tenet, in his book At the Center of the Storm, is very, very irritated, if not, oh, I don't know, pick a word, Mike, pissed at Cheney and Condoleezza Rice because, like the couple of banal Peter Principle types these two are, they are now blaming and have been blaming a steady drumbeat of blame put on Tenet. It was George Tenet's fault. It was George Tenet's fault. George Tenet and the CIA got us into this mess. On and on and on. And Tenet has, he's had it up. He describes, Tenet in his book describes helping to kill a planned speech by Dick Cheney on the eve of the invasion because its claims of links between al-Qaeda and Iraq went, quote, way beyond what the intelligence shows, end quote. Now, you got to wonder about that sentence, way beyond what the intelligence shows. There was nothing. Nothing. Anywhere. Anytime. Any place. It was all made up. So what do you suppose George Tenet means with that line? Tenet also describes in particular the extraordinary tension between him and Condoleezza Rice, who was then National Security Advisor, and her deputy, this murderous, blood-soaked Stephen Hadley, and how this little group got into a debate over how the president came to say in his 2003 State of the Union that Iraq was seeking uranium in Africa. When, forget to Valerie Plame and her husband, Wilson, forget them. Everybody knew that was planning this filthy murder spree knew there was no Niger, uranium, Iraq connection at all. Tenet also says in the book that he had not been sure he wanted to accept the Medal of Freedom. Well, he said he agreed to accept it after he saw that the citation, quote, was all about the CIA's work against terrorism, not Iraq, end quote. Oh, really? So that made it all okay, right, George? You scum sucker. See, these tell-all books, I mean, I love it when they come out, don't you? Because that's the only way we're ever going to get the truth from this circle of murderers, is to have one of the murderers break out of the circle and start blowing the whistle on the rest of them. That's the only way it's ever going to happen. But you just, on the other hand, you want to say, well, what, you accepted the Medal of Freedom because of the CIA's work against terrorism? Okay, all right. You didn't say that at the time. Tenet says he decided to write this book in part because of that infamous slam dunk episode had come to define his time at the CIA. He claims now he didn't mean the invasion would be a slam dunk. He meant that building a case to the American people would be a slam dunk. Well, George, hello. On the one hand, you say it was all lies. There was no truth. There's nothing there. So what you mean is, you understand, don't you, George, that the American people, all of us, are so goddamn stupid that we would sit there like we did and allow you murderous insiders decide to take this country into the most bloody adventure in the past, what, 40 years, 30 years? You pig. So now you're going to write your memoirs and say, well, it was George. It wasn't just me. It was Dick Cheney. It was Condoleezza. But you know, George is a real stand-up guy. It's just unbelievable. And it keeps coming, doesn't it? And this sick, murderous Dick Cheney. Come on, you know this as well as I do. The next time this cyborg appears anywhere on television, he's going to say the same thing when the subject of Iraq comes up. Well, George Tenet assured us that it would be a slam dunk. So we decided to go ahead and begin our murder spree, if you will, because... killing Iraqis has been great sport, and we'd like to kill some Iranians. They claim that they're not Arabs or Persians. Ha ha. I mean, you know, who cares? F them. But anyway, as far as George Tenet is concerned, he said what we said he said. And if he's denying it now, that's because he's decided to become a sissy little liberal. We know what he said. Asked about all these assertions in the book by George Tenet, a White House spokes thug, Gordon Jandreau, who I believe used to be in some form of media, didn't he used to be a reporter or something? Gordon Jandreau defended the pre-war deliberations. That never occurred. See? Jandreau defended it. Here's what this flack in the White House says, quote, and notice they give it to somebody fifth or sixth down the line. They don't give it to too much Cappuccino Perino, and they don't let Tony Snow go out there and say it. They give it to some flack way down in the cellar, in the pecking order. Gordon Jandreau, White House spokesman, he said, quote, "Well, the president made the decision to remove Saddam Hussein for a number of reasons. Mainly the national intelligence estimate on Iraq and Saddam Hussein's own actions, and only after a thorough and lengthy assessment of all available information, as well as congressional authorization, did we remove him." Really? See, to murderers on the scale of the Bush family and the Bush crime family, and I'm talking about all the way back to Bush's grandparents who assisted in the Holocaust, who assisted in providing financing to Adolf Hitler. All the way through contemporary history, you will find a Walker or a Bush coated and covered in the blood of other people. Not their own family members, in the blood of other people. This is a disgusting family. It truly, truly is. It just astonishingly so. And to assert, as Tenet does, that, well, you know, I really like him. I like George. He was a real leader after 2001. Gives you an indication of how much you and I should give a damn about George Tenet. I hope he gets his roasting hole in hell, too. The book recounts CIA efforts to fight al-Qaeda in the years before the September 11 attacks and Mr. Tenet's early warnings about Osama bin Laden. He contends that the urgent appeals of the CIA on terrorism received a lukewarm reception at the White House through most of 2001. He says that on more than one occasion, Tenet claims, he notified the Republican security team in the White House that they're coming. They're going to strike here. It wasn't just the infamous August whatever 2001 PDB. It was several in that year that kept flowing through the hands of these criminal sons of bitches who we have decided to allow to remain in office. Several times, Tenet claims he tried to warn these bastards, and every time it was just like, oh, well, really? You want to play? Go play some golf? And then Tenet, at one point in the book, gives a what's referred to as a vigorous defense of the CIA's secret prisons and torture techniques. He doesn't explicitly describe what is done to these people, but he's proud of it. You see, he's proud of it. So, Tana, all I can say is, you know, yeah, I hope you rip the scab off. I hope the blood and the pus comes running out so the hardcore American Republican right-wing brain-dead thugs can take a look and see what's really there. Yeah, I hope your book works to that extent. I wonder how Rush Limbaugh and the other pigs in talk radio are going to treat you now. George, what do you think, huh? You were a big hero to these right-wing bastards until your book came out. Huh? At the center of the storm, indeed. Yeah. I love to see rabid dogs fall on each other rather than start biting innocent people. And these are rabid dogs. These people... in this Bush crime family. It's unbelievable. Now, will this book and the revelations contained therein have an effect? Do you think that the hardcore asses in the United States of America, the Republicans who still support this killer in the White House, do you think this book is going to have an effect on their attitude? Do you think they can handle the truth? Neither do I. Ah, oh, Lord. Oh, and Paul Wolfowitz now, this whiny little thug, is accusing the board of directors at the World Bank of treating him shabbily and unfairly because they want his corrupt ass out of there. They don't want him to be the president of the World Bank anymore because he's a liar. He puts his girlfriend in, almost said ho, puts his girlfriend in a position of power, totally non-commensurate with what she should be there for, if anything. He brings in a whole cluster of right-wingers from the Bush crime family to run the World Bank, and now he's complaining that his treatment has been shabby and unfair. Aw, you pissy little whiner, why don't you put on a flak jacket and you go to Baghdad? Bear witness to the sickness of these dictators. Hope you understand the time, brother, because it's major. What would you do?
We're still at war. It's in our country's interest to find those who would do harm to us and get them out of harm's way.
Well, I going back to the Tenet book, I really will be curious to see what sort of response this book will have. It'll be interesting to watch some of the media whores on the weekend talk shows, like media whore number one, Tim Russert. I'm sure he'll jump all over this. Judas Stephanopoulos, I'm sure he will. Poor old Bob Schieffer, who is shocked, I tell you, to find out that a fellow Texan has been such a filthy liar and murderer, a fellow Texan for whom Bob Schieffer's brother worked at one time. So I'd be surprised how Schieffer seems to be the most shell-shocked about all this stuff. But and as far as Wolf Blitzer, former German U-boat commander, he couldn't care less. You know, just give it to me, I'll read it. So Wolfowitz is just a little bit more about him. He's whining now. See, like so many of these little rat bastards, what Wolfowitz is afraid of is losing his job. And the board of governors or directors, whatever they call it, there's 24 directors apparently at this bank. And according to news reports, let me put it that way, because I got this from The Australian, but I'm sure this is AP or something. According to news reports, the board, the 24 board members on the World Bank were shocked by the tone in the letter that Wolfowitz sent them all when he whined and bitched and wetted himself about how shabbily and unfairly he's been treated. Oh, my God. And, see, we're going to talk about this, and hopefully, I don't mean you and I are, because I'm finished with this as soon as I finish with this, which is about another minute. But it'll be talked about by the pundits, whereas the lies and filth and murderous deceptions used by Wolfowitz, to take us into this war and this occupation, they don't talk about that. Hello? Why not? So on these weekend jab fests that you may or may not want to watch Sunday, I don't know if I will either. If they do talk about the Wolfowitz slime ball at all, it'll be from the position of he got his girlfriend a job at the World Bank and then got her raises and pay increases that she simply didn't, that were not warranted, and just kind of shuffled his girlfriend round and round inside the Bush crime family. Extended family, you know, the World Bank, the boards of governors of oil companies and foreign governments, and you know how the Bush crime family is, right? Huh? But they won't talk about the Keystone kind of push that Wolfowitz gave to the killers in the Bush crime family to take us into this war and this occupation. And it's just, I don't know. Henry Waxman of the Government Reform Committee, Chairman Waxman, has invited George Tenet. You got to invite Wolfowitz, too. Hey, Wolfie, why don't you come over, too? But the Waxman has invited George Tenet to testify before his panel in May coming up. And according to Brent Badowski, writing at his blog site, he says, with a big money book tour coming up, no doubt that Tenet will agree to testify. That'll be must-see TV. not a presentation of eight Democratic candidates as happened last night. That's kind of like, oh, Jesus, go away, all of you. And the networks agree. That's why they put it on MSNBC. But to listen to Tenet and or Wolfowitz testify would just be thrilling. It would be like a watching a condensed version of Days of Our Lives or All My Children. It would just be soap opera of the highest order, wouldn't it? But Badowski suggests some questions that should be asked by the interviewers as Tenet goes on his promotional tour. Did he know about deception, dishonesty, falsification, or misrepresentation of pre-war intelligence? Did he know whether any officials in the Bush crime family testified falsely to Congress? When British intelligence had suggested that intelligence on Iraq was being fixed, was he referring to any false statements that Tenet put out or testified to? Or false statements that others testified to. Tenet should know exactly who did the fixing and who should testify. Next question. What exactly was the relationship between American intelligence and Iranian intelligence prior to the war? Was there cooperation with Iranian intelligence? What exactly was the role of Mr. Shalabi? Remember him? The guy with the name that sounds like you've got a bad bronchial infection? Were there acts of torture that George Tenet supervised or was aware of? Acts that violated U.S. law or European law or the Geneva Convention or national laws of other states. Huh? Was there, George? Eh? What do you think? Badowski says, here's another one. What collaboration existed in potential torture violations with third-party nations like, oh, you know, Syria, Egypt, former Soviet bloc nations that engage in repression and torture the same way they engage in tea and sandwiches for lunch, huh? George Tenet should know and should be asked about the role of Gonzalez as White House counsel on torture in issues or as Attorney General. Did Gonzalez write any currently unknown legal opinions contrary to commonly accepted principles of law? Or did he participate in executive orders that attempted to make legal what otherwise would be illegal? See, these are the questions that George Tenet should be asked. Did Tenet ever discuss the CIA leak case? You know, the Valerie Plame with the president and the vice president? Huh? Remember those color-coded terror alerts? That always appeared at politically opportune times and then magically disappeared after elections? You notice that? What happened? Where? I want my color-coded terror alert! So another question, Brent Badowski points out, is Tenet aware of any dishonest, false, or politically driven terror alerts that involve manipulation, possibly in violation of the law? And it goes on and on and on. And journalists should ask Tenet whether he intends to donate his profits from the book to wounded troops' medical care. You know the answer to that one. Welcome back, about 6:30 past the hour. Let me tell you a little bit about Stephen Rosenfeld. He was the executive producer of Radio Nation. That was Laura Flanders' program. And at its peak, it was heard on more than 100 Air America radio and public radio stations. He is also co-author of What Happened in Ohio, a documentary record of theft and fraud in the 2004 election, and also author of a book about the election to Congress of socialist Bernie Sanders of Vermont. Further, he is an award-winning journalist, been a staff reporter at NPR, Monitor Radio, TomPaine.com, as well as newspapers in Vermont. His most recent article, published at FreePress.org, that I mentioned to you earlier tonight, it's making its rounds now to numerous websites, is the GOP Cyber Hit Squad, which describes how the same GOP computers that hosted a secret White House email system that we've all heard about here in the news in the past couple of weeks was also home to the software and websites used to count and report the outcome of Ohio's 2004 presidential election. Oh my God, Stephen, welcome to the program. That last little bit there, that the same the email system was connected to the same one counting Ohio's votes. That's stunning. I can't get my mind around that. How's come Tom Brokaw's not there? How's come Brian Williams didn't talk about it tonight?
Well, you know, it's really amazing, Mike. I have spent a lot of time this week trying to get a lot of friends of mine who are in the major media to take this seriously.
Uh-huh.
And they're not. And, you know, maybe they didn't do the reporting, and therefore they can't claim ownership to the story, but, you know, it's really worse than we expected. I mean, you know, there have been a team of people, including myself, who went back to try to find out what happened in Ohio.
Right.
And it started after the election in 2004, and what happened was we raised money on Laura's show, and Randy chipped in, and you know, not all the Air America hosts wanted to raise this topic or look at it.
That's right. Not to mention any names, but one had the initials of Al Franken, but yeah, never mind.
Never mind. We raised this is really important, though, because we raised $120,000 from listeners who wanted an accounting. And what that money went to was basically the discovery process in a lawsuit. And the reason that's really critical is when you try to gather stuff under a standard of evidence to introduce into court, it's not the same as a standard of evidence to write in a paper.
Right.
It's got to be more solid.
Absolutely.
So what we did was we quickly found that there were layers to the story. The first layer to the story we found was all the voter suppression stuff, which was basically stopping, African Americans from voting in the big cities, stopping mm-hmm. college students from voting, stopping senior citizens by filing absentee ballots, all the likely Democratic voters. And I should tell you that, you know, civil rights suits have been filed, and they're going to be settled in the next couple of weeks, or maybe month, 1 to 2 months, on those issues, you know, based on the stuff we dug up. The next layer of this is what is like...
Okay, voter suppression is the first layer. The second layer...
Yeah, so that's like... voter suppression is the return of Jim Crow under Karl Rove. The second layer is the return of Boss Tweed, which is the ballot box stuffing. And well, the question is, you know, what does that look like in modern America? And it takes different shapes. But what we found was that we knew Bush was going to win in the countryside, but the numbers that came in were just off the charts. I mean, there literally were towns that reported turnouts that were over 100% as part of the official results. And Blackwell, the Secretary of State, had a gag order and everything, and it literally took us until early last year, literally a year ago, to actually start counting ballots. And what we found was a lot of places where they said, let's say 500 people were voted, well, then only 400 people signed the signature books. And we have dozens of examples of stuff like that. So where this goes now is this. We have lots of theories about how they managed to pull off stuff like that. I mean, all kinds of crazy stuff happened on election night. There were literally Homeland Security alerts where ballots were taken to armed, guarded warehouses. Crazy stuff.
I remember that.
But here's the thing to get us to where we are today. You know, we were thinking old style ballot box or stuffing or some kind of modern version of it. We never dreamed that the Republicans would basically be using, a client Republican firm that hosts just about every Republican website in America to be the host of the Ohio Secretary of State's website, which is where everyone would go to from the public to the media to get the results. We also never imagined that the software that actually was everyone was looking at online to see the results were designed by the same people who built George Bush's own campaign website and what ended up being the Bush-Cheney transition team website and a lot of other Republican sites. So and then we also never realized that a lot of the people who were assisting with the counting in the office were basically students at all these Christian universities. And so what you've got here is you've got a situation here where the most invested partisans are controlling not just the counting of the vote, but how it's being reported to the media and voters. And then what happens is people say, okay, we have to remind people what happened on election night, which was that Kerry was winning in the cities. The cities reported first, then the results got stalled. And then, so the question becomes, did they use this system to jack the numbers? And that's where we're saying we need to have, like Waxman and other people look at it. And we're trying to look at it, too. But, we're just a handful of people.
Well, you report, I believe, in the article you and Bob wrote, that once the returns started showing Kerry winning, the website was frozen for an hour and a half.
Yes. Yes. There was this very arcane controversy called the exit poll discrepancy.
Right.
And what happened was, that hour and a half, the beginning of that was one side of that controversy, and the end of it was the other. And what I'm referring to is that the exit poll said Kerry was going to win, and then all of a sudden they weren't updated. And then 80 to 90 minutes later, we get the results that Bush, the numbers have flipped.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that period was marked by not just us, by a lot of people noticed that.
Well, you also have that one assumes it may have the results been jiggered in that hour and a half. But you've got in here that thousands of people who voted for Bush.
Yeah, that's
also voted for gay marriage.
Yeah.
In the state's Bible Belt. Like, oh yeah, that's real. That really happened.
See, yeah. See, what happened was, you know, when you have these presidential.
That's like Jews for Buchanan,
yeah, exactly.
Down in Florida. Oh.
Well, you know, people. That's really easy. Was really easy to trace. You just go to at the county level. Look, we looked at the results in something like 11,000 out of Ohio's 13,000 precincts.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say we, there's like a team of like a dozen people who've really been committed to this over like the last year. But that one's really easy to figure out. You look at the total number of votes for Bush. You look at the total number of votes that were against this constitutional amendment that was basically to ban gay marriage. And you just compare the numbers. And when you do that, you're in the part of the state that Karl Rove says you had this evangelical, crushing turnout that nobody saw on television. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that, you know, that 10,000 people apparently voted, you know, both for Bush and both, you know, in favor of gay marriage. You know, to us, we said, you know, at first we thought, well, what they were doing was they were just somebody was basically running these ballots through machines that were calibrated for other precincts, and therefore the Bush and the Kerry numbers flipped. That may sound a little complicated.
That sounds like the Occam's razor. The simplest explanation is usually the right one.
They took all these ballots to a warehouse. They had them under police guard. They weren't counted at the precinct level as required by law. It wouldn't have taken that long to have. I mean, see, here's the thing. If you step back, you know, that's maybe an old school style thing, but they had a computer network where they had real time results. They knew what was happening with the exit polls, and they were controlling the dissemination of the results to the public. So if they needed to slow down the process to turn in some numbers, they had a perfectly defensible way to cover that. And then, you know, in American politics, Mike, a winner is announced, and then if you are a loser, if you're the person who lost, it's like, shut up, go away, stop whining.
Right. Hey, hold on a second, Stephen. Let me put you on hold. We got to do a break here. We're talking with Stephen Rosenfeld, who was the executive producer of Radio Nation with Laura Flanders, one of my favorite programs, by the way, and favorite host. Stephen, along with Bob Fertakis, and several other people, have kind of ripped the veil away here, and what they're showing should have a profound effect on how Americans think about the last presidential election. The question in my mind is, will it? Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Like earning capital. I earned capital in the campaign, political capital, and now I intend to spend it. It is my style. That's what happened in after the 2000 election. I earned some capital. I've earned capital in this election, and I'm going to spend
shut
it.
Shut up! We're talking with Stephen Rosenfeld, investigative journalist, who, along with Bob Fertakis, has a piece out right now at thefreepress.org. entitled The GOP Cyber Election Hit Squad. If you don't read anything else this weekend, please go and read this. I would hope, Stephen, that reading it online is not the only place for people to read it.
Well, I would hope so too. I've been trying to talk to all the friends I have that are in both public radio and television and in the print media to take it seriously. And I can tell you, a lot of people say, oh, very nice, very intriguing, and then they say, we got to go back to Blacksburg.
Well, that and media wrote off, television and print, wrote off the charges of fraud and the proof of fraud in the 2000 election. They have effectively written off charges of and proof of fraud in the 2004 election. We have been utterly betrayed, Steve, and this is something that we've been talking about for a couple of weeks on this program off and on. We have been totally and utterly betrayed by media in this country whose profession is the only one, when you stop and think about it, that is constitutionally protected in the First Amendment. And these rat bastards have totally let us down.
I couldn't agree more. You know, Moyers had that special on Wednesday night that
yes.
put it really well. The White House leaks documents to the New York Times, the Washington Post. They write about them and they appear on the Sunday front pages. And then they send the cabinet members out to comment on the documents they've leaked.
Right.
This is the exact same thing. You design a computer system to report the election results, and all of a sudden you say the results show your candidate winning. What is the difference?
To anyone with the sense God gave a sack of doorknobs, there is no difference. Let me ask you, what do you honestly believe is the next step? What you and your associates have done here?
I can tell you what the next step is.
All right.
You know, we've been getting anonymous calls from people in the Ohio Secretary of State's office telling us that that, you know, be really careful where you go here, because what they're saying is that there were different computer systems that were in use, and you know, data had to be taken from one and entered into another on election night, and be really careful, you know. But I tell you, you know, what's happening here is we're seeing elections being privatized. We're seeing the votes
yes.
being dismantled. We're seeing
right.
the public losing control. And there are very few people in the media who really get it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is really what is happening. So, you know, we just got to keep doing the reporting. We can. I mean, there were a lot of people who contributed to this story. The people who traced the computer links, this is really interesting, Mike. There was this group called epluribusmedia.org. They're a subset of the Daily Kos community.
Right.
These are business people and government folks who will not publish stuff under their own name because they're afraid of losing their jobs. But meanwhile, they're sending all this stuff around and doing the computer traces.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't know if people – I'll tell you something. I think that we've got about 4 or 6 months for the DNC to take this seriously, or it's just going to happen again. You know,
yeah.
I'll tell you, when we did our you know, What Happened in Ohio books for the New Press, you go back to the summer of 2004, and you remember all those good Democrats who were bragging about registering voters.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knew where the hundreds of thousands of voters that were purged were. Nobody went out to try to re-register them. Instead, everyone was patting themselves on the back about how great they were that were registering new voters. In Ohio, they didn't start from zero with registering voters. They started at negative 200,000.
Right.
The party hasn't admitted that. They haven't owned up to it. And that's really like nuts and bolts stuff. That's 19th century stuff. This is the
mm-hmm.
21st century, where the other side basically decided to buy the whole system upon which the votes would be counted, and nobody even noticed it on election night.
Well, that's the hideous part. It's one thing to lie us into a war. It's something else to gut regulatory agencies. But my God, when you go after the very fundamentals of a system of self-government, and your goal is to destroy it utterly and turn it into something easily manipulated by whomever, then your attack is against the entire society, and in this instance, fascism is just standing over in the shadows having a cigarette waiting.
You know, you ask the question, what's the end game here? I can tell you, what's the goal here? The goal that they want, what does the other side want to accomplish? They want to have national electronic voting. They got through HAVA, statewide voter databases, where every voter is now in that database. Now they want to complete the process and have everybody vote electronically so that, you know, at 10 o'clock on election night, they can say to folks from Maine to Hawaii, we're done.
Mm-hmm.
There's no audit. See you later.
Oh, my God. Stephen, I want to talk again with you. We're out of time for
this
segment, but let's stay in touch. Kathy,
okay.
Let's stay in touch with you, and maybe we can get you back on in a week or two, because if this story goes the way it should, you and Bob and a bunch of people with your organization are going to be causing some real ripples. Thanks a lot, Stephen. I appreciate
it. Thank you so much.
All right. Take
Bye.
Care. Stephen Rosenfeld joined us from San Francisco. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
target things easier and move more quickly, which means we need to be lighter and quicker or facile.
It's 25 before the hour. I got an email here from someone who wants to know when I'm going to place, or we're going to play some clips from the presentation last night by the 8 Democratic presidential hopefuls. And one word answer is never.
About a year from now, we'll start covering
Never. There's no reason, and I firmly believe this, not that there's been an outpouring or some sort of a demand for us to do any particular thing on this program, but what occurred last night to me was a presentation, and anyone who doesn't know these candidates has been living in a cave somewhere. Dennis Kucinich has been my pick for president since, since 1999. And obviously my candidate is not going to get elected, much less nominated, or nominated, much less elected, but I'll continue to support him. As far as even Dennis didn't say anything last night at that presentation that you're not familiar with, Truth Seeker, if you've not been living in a cave somewhere. No one who spoke. The only thing that I found even slightly intriguing was Hillary Clinton trying to stretch her gonads a little bit last night with her threat to bomb anyone who attacks us. I don't like Hillary Clinton. For those of you who listen to this program online, you hear something called Liberals on the Couch, a little promo put together by one of the few radio geniuses, and I mean that sincerely, in this business, the guy who works for, among other stations, he does a lot of work for KPHX. He's the one that does that thing about, well, you don't have to be, what is it? You don't have to be sarcastic, the sheep. And again, tonight I'm drawing a blank on his name, but he's an absolute radio genius. But the piece that we had that we play, if you listen online, about Hillary on the or Liberals on the Couch, you know, explore your feelings about Hillary Clinton, and maybe you'll learn something. Yeah, I've done that, and the little promo, the little thing is absolutely right. What I've discovered is Hillary Clinton would be a less effective president than Kathy Bay. I'm not the least bit interested in Hillary Clinton. Never have been, can't be. It has nothing to do with her gender. It has to do with her qualifications. And there may be a strong pro-Hillary faction inside Nova M Radio Network. I don't know. If there is, it's not talked about. But I'll damn sure never climb on board. The only way I would vote for Hillary would be the same reason I voted for Kerry. Is if she becomes the Democratic Party's nominee to be president. I'm certainly not going to stay home, and I'm certainly not going to vote for a Republican, and no, I'm not going to vote independent, and no, I'm not going to vote green or red or yellow. I'm sorry. I don't live in that fantasy world where a protest vote would matter. I'm sorry. And I don't even want to get into it. Maybe in another lifetime. I can come back as a political, or not come back, but go to a different lifetime as a political organizer and get people with courage nominated and elected, but not in this lifetime. We have no clips to play for you from the presentation last night. As far as the only two Democrats, or three, there were three there who said things that I found interesting. That would be, and I only know this from picking up some of it on YouTube. I didn't watch it, but Mike Gravel, Dennis Kucinich, what's his name from North Carolina? Edwards. God, I hate these senior moments. John Edwards. So, and as far as the other four are concerned, you know, I yawn. Tell me you heard something you haven't heard. It was bat squeeze of the highest order, and NBC knew it, and they don't care anyway. NBC doesn't give a damn who's president. They couldn't care less, so they stick it on MSNBC. This is just breaking on ABC, and the reason I'm going to mention it is because several people have sent it to me, and this is another bit of humor. This was unexpected tonight, but we have a lot of humor tonight, all of it disgusting and sick. But the Deputy Secretary of State, Randall Tobias, has submitted his resignation. You know, he waited until late Friday to do it. That's one day after confirming to ABC News that he has, yes, he has, been a customer of a Washington, D.C. escort service, whose owner has been charged by federal prosecutors with running a prostitution operation. This guy is 65. He's the director of U.S. Foreign Assistance and administrator of the U.S. Agency for International Development. Huh? How about that? He had previously served as the ambassador for the president's emergency fund for AIDS relief. Now, this hypocritical little son of a bitch who is married and probably has children, doesn't say here, but he was referred to as Bush's so-called AIDS czar. And at the time, he was criticized for emphasizing faithfulness and abstinence over condom use to prevent the spread of AIDS. Huh? Doesn't this always happen? Right? Doesn't this always happen? Now, of course, I'm convicting him. You're damn right. I don't care what the truth is. I know what the truth. I don't care what the truth is as he's going to spin it. I know what the truth is. He said he was leaving the State Department for personal reasons. And today, and yesterday, he told ABC News he had several times called the Pamela Martin and Associates escort service to, quote, have gals come over to the condo to give me a massage, end quote. He went on to say there had been, quote, no sex, end quote, and that recently he had been using another service, quote, with Central Americans, end quote, to provide massages. Don't you love these pigs? Don't you just, I mean, can't you smell this guy? Can't you smell? Wait. Oh, can't you just smell this thug? And then there's more. Tobias's private cell phone number was among thousands of numbers listed in the records provided to ABC News by the woman dubbed the DC Madam. She's facing federal charges, and she said, I'm not going to go to federal prison for one day, let alone 48 years, because I'm shy about bringing in the deputy secretary of whatever. How you go? Don't you love sex workers? Now, it's an interview that will be broadcast on 2020 next Friday. The madam says she intends to call Mr. Tobias and a number of her other prominent D.C. clients to testify at her trial. Now, Ms. Tobias is, she's no gemstone herself. She says that her girls only got involved in sexual fantasy stuff. You know, they didn't really have sex. And she said that her business was legal and it was all about sexual fantasies, and that if any of the women who were working for her went out there and had sex, they did so in violation of her rules and without her knowledge. Yeah. What? Monsieur, you have gambling in this place? No, really? So, you got to lighten up once in a while. So there you have it. The Deputy Secretary of State, Randall Tobias, married man, who said that the best way to fight AIDS was to be faithful to your partner and to abstain from sex. Never mind those tacky, nasty condoms. Leave those alone. Just be faithful to your partner and abstain if you don't have a steady partner. And so here's another one. These filthy hypocrites, aren't they? Huh? I know y'all hate it when I spend even 2 minutes on a tacky story like that. Cindy says Rumsfeld is still working every day at the Pentagon. I asked what became of him. He's not the Secretary of Defense, but he still has a staff and reports every day to his office, where no doubt the shredders are running full steam. Yeah, I'm sure he's hired Oliver North and Fawn Hall. Remember her? Fawn? The Oliver North's, God, I almost said ho. She was an honorable assistant. I don't know why that word keeps popping in my head. I'm sorry. It's the Wolfowitz story. That's right. And now this. That's right. But I'm sure that I have a suspicion. I'm not sure that Rumsfeld has hired Oliver North, who, is for sale, always has been, to come in and show him the most effective and efficient way to keep a shredder running 24/7 without overheating. Okay. Oh, and tomorrow is, this is from Deb, who's a street vendor in Seattle. Please remind people, tomorrow is impeachment day. Put up a sign in your yard or the window of your house or window of your car or wherever you are. Do it tomorrow if you want to impeach any or all of them. Deb writes, I and people I spoke with seem to think it is important to let the world know how we feel, too. Even if it doesn't come to pass here in the States, it makes us unite and feel better able to cope with all that's going on. Let the world know how we feel. We won't go down silently. And then she adds, I thought I heard this on your radio show the other night and have been telling people on the street about it all week. Many do not know about it, but are enthusiastic about it when I tell them. So few people knew, I wonder if I heard it right. Yeah, you heard it right. It's several organizations. And we were going to have a guest from one of those organizations last night, but I guess they got too busy and said, Malloy who? Radio? Ah, we don't need radio. Okay, whatever's fair. But do it tomorrow. If you are, if you want George Bush to continue and Dick Cheney to continue, don't do anything. Just don't do anything. But if you want them gone, indicate somehow, some way that you favor impeachment. W. In a longer email here, Amy writes, Mike, I watched the, quote, debate, end quote, last night. First, doesn't anybody have a dictionary anymore? Our language keeps becoming more and more corrupted. Debate, a contention by words or arguments, as A, the formal discussion of a motion before a deliberative body, according to the rules of parliamentary procedure. B, a regulated discussion of a proposition between two match sides. Last night's show seemed more like an American Idol. Are we supposed to vote someone off each week? It is 10 months before the state's primary elections. How many of those 8 people standing up there last night will still be standing? Will there be anyone who might join the circus? I'm thinking Al Gore, maybe. Anyone else? And then there's more here. But that's kind of pertinent to what I was saying. Again, my feeling about presidential candidates or candidates for any office, really, is that they should be denied television time, denied it. They can't have it. They can't buy it. Buying advertisements. They should be denied access to television studios and these kinds of cattle calls like we had last night. This is nonsense, and it is destroying even more rapidly than Karl Rove and George Bush, even the concept of democracy. When you have people that are willing to sit back on their asses and watch something like what occurred last night and say, oh, wow, well, that's pretty profound. Yeah, I'm going to vote for him or her. Then you have an electorate that is so grossly uninformed as to render their decision utterly and absolutely meaningless. And if it has any meaning at all, people who vote after watching something like that, then the meaning is, hi, I'm Joe, American citizen. I'm a real dumbass, but I'm going to vote for this one because I really like what they said last night in the 2 minutes they got to talk. Woohoo! My God. Deny these people television time. Keep them the hell. First of all, television is an instrument of the devil. It's designed to corrupt, pollute, lie, distort, and primarily to make you forget. It's an instrument that allows 30 and 60 second political ads to come out that says John Kerry really killed his mother in a jungle somewhere located in the northern reaches of Borneo back in 1968 when everyone really thought he was in the military. No, no, he was beheading his mother. That's what television does. Screw television. If a candidate wants to reach the public, I'll tell you how to do it. I've said this before, and it doesn't matter. The candidate busts his ass, not raising money. $100 million to buy crapola time for spots? No. He spends or she spends all of the campaign, going to union halls and high school auditoriums and dance halls and warehouses and street corners and just stand there and start talking to the American public. And eventually people will start writing about that candidate and then sit your ass down and read what has been written about the candidate and read what the candidate himself or herself has written and read what their record is. Then make your decision. You got to watch this garbage that was on MSNBC last night and go, oh, look, oh, we have a new hero. Oh, good God. And people wonder why we're in the situation that we're in. That's part of the reason. Television. Television. It has corrupted, polluted, and is in the process of utterly and absolutely destroying the process by which we Americans have tried to govern ourselves for the past 230 years. Stay away from television. Unless you want to watch crap and pap, something chewing gum for the brain. What did Newton Minow call it back in the 60s? The vast wasteland! You think it's gotten better in the past 50 years? Hey, it hasn't. I've watched it all those years. It's crapola. It's worse than crapola because now it has penetrated our political system. Live from Spartanburg, South Carolina, the Democratic Candidates Forum. Da 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 bum 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 bam bam bum bum bum. Over here we have Barack Obama. Over here we have Hillary Clinton. Over here we have Mike Gravel. Over here we have Dennis Kucinich. Bum 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 bum. You better get real before you lose the whole damn thing, Truth Seeker. You know what I'm saying? In keeping with our comedic attempt tonight, which that's Stephanie Miller. And by the way, she's going to be on MSNBC. You all know this. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday coming in Don Imus's old time slot. So tune in. 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern time. Just get your ass out of bed and watch. Or stay in bed and watch. Russian President Vladimir Putin, the one who has had this platonic love affair with George Bush for I don't know how long, said yesterday that Russia is going to suspend its compliance with the Treaty on Conventional Arms in Europe that was put together at the end of the Cold War, which, according to some people who know a lot more than you and I do, that opens a fresh and intense dispute in the souring relations between NATO and the Kremlin. Now, that's bad enough, but what he said is that he's going to back out of this conventional weapons treaty because he's pissed off. He's being surrounded. He doesn't like the attitude of these neocon thugs. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, speaking in Oslo at a gathering of diplomats from NATO countries, reacted coldly to Mr. Putin's speech. You know what she said? She said, these are treaty obligations, and everyone is expected to live up to treaty obligations, end quote. How many treaties has her boyfriend, her husband, as she has referred to him, how many treaties has her husband, oops, her president, violated? How many? These are treaty obligations, and everyone is expected to live up to treaty obligations, or I will hit you upside the head with my brand new Ferragamos. We'll be back after the break. Stick around. Your phone calls when we come back on Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. 6:30 past the hour. Email here from Zelf. Zelf. Hi, Mike. Today, Michael Garcia, the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, declined to prosecute former Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist for insider trading. Garcia was one of the U.S. attorneys who was not fired. Our federal legal process is now completely suspect, with the U.S. attorney positions now in the hands of partisan Republican loyalists who use their office not to pursue justice but to benefit the party. It's in the Washington Post and the Nashville Tennessean. At issue, of course, was the long-running investigation of Bill Frist selling all of his remaining HCA, Hospital Corporation of America, I think, shares in the summer of 2005, just a couple of days before HCA stock price fell dramatically, falling almost 10% in a single day. Executives at the Equitable Trust, a Northern Trust, who maintained Frist's stock in private accounts, sold the stock after receiving his orders. Now, that seems to violate the idea of a blind trust, doesn't it? Blind trust means that you don't know what's going on and you stay the hell out of it. But it's on the record that Frist called and said, dump this crap. You know, my family has finally milked it for all it's worth. And it was dumped, and then, you know, the people who didn't have an inside track like Frist did lost their asses. But it's okay. It's all right. The article says, ending an investigation that clouded the tenure of former Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, federal prosecutors have decided not to file insider trading charges against the Tennessee Republican for his sales of stock in a family-owned chain of hospitals. The U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York and Securities and Exchange Commission staff last week sent Frist letters signaling they had closed their joint 18-month investigation. The letters essentially cleared him of any wrongdoing. Why, of course. Now, wasn't that the company that was charged with one of the, I think it was Frist, his family that owned it, charged and convicted and wound up paying the largest fine regarding Medicare fraud in the history of Medicare? This is the same group, right? The Frist family. These people are real bandits, real outlaws, only they're worse than Billy the Kid, because these people continue to try to tell folks who will listen what good Christians they are and how they believe in Jesus, the Savior, and the Lamb, and, you know, so on and so forth. And yet they are thieves and liars and sneaks. But Bill Frist has been cleared. Yay! Way to go, Bill! Yay! Thank God you were cleared. Those dirty ass, who came after you? Who was it? Was it liberals? I'm sure it was. From BJ, regarding the presentation last night of the Democratic candidates for the presidency, BJ writes, "Hi, Mike. Not one of their sorry asses raised their hand when Brian Williams asked if anyone was going to sign on with Kucinich for impeaching Cheney. None of them did." BJ writes, "I felt a rush of hate like you wouldn't believe. When I screamed, my neighbors must have thought I had a home invasion going on." By the way, if you're watching Fox News, she says terror alert in the country right now is orange. And George Tenet will be on Larry King Live Monday night. Ooh, can't wait. More must-see TV. That's right. One of the biggest frauds in the history of the United States. Put him on Larry King. Yeah, that's a good idea. And let's see. Putin is getting very pissed off. He's getting very pissed off to the point that he's pulled out of this treaty on conventional arms in Europe. He said, "I go pound sand." He says that Russia is angry because in 2001, the Bush administration pulled out of the anti-ballistic missile treaty that went all the way back to 1972. See, we did that. But Condoleezza Rice says,
"How dare he do that? These are treaty obligations, and everyone is expected to live up to treaty obligations." Does she not realize the asininity of what she's saying? When her husband, I'm sorry, her president, oh, never mind, jeez.
She went on to say to pour acid into this former KGB thug, Vladimir Putin. She went on and said,
the idea that somehow 10 interceptors and a few radars in Eastern Europe are going to threaten the Soviet strategic deterrent is purely ludicrous, and everybody knows it.
Now, you notice that she inadvertently there slipped into Cold War terminology with her reference to the Soviet Union.
Honey, the Soviet Union hasn't existed for a long time. Putin is not the head of anything. Well, Russia, never mind.
You see, this is what Condoleezza Rice's specialty was. She was a Cold Warrior. Her idea was to... place cruise missiles all over Europe and threaten the Soviets, back when there was a Soviet Union, Condoleezza, with instant annihilation unless they played on our ball court with our balls and bats or our baseball diamond or something. But the audacity of the woman to say everyone is expected to live up to treaty obligations. Now, she says... It's crazy
that Mr. Putin would be upset because 10 interceptors and a few radars in Eastern Europe.
Imagine, just for a moment, let your mind go. Here. Okay. Now imagine if the Russians, not the Soviets, honey, if the Russians decided to put up radar stations and conventional interceptor bases in Mexico. What do you suppose? Oh, never mind. You're way ahead of me. You're already in the bathroom throwing up. I got it. All right, never mind. And what else do we have here? Oh, yeah. So then I did it. Tried to do a Google on today on Bush and broken treaties. And it said Bush has been particularly reluctant to participate in the multilateral treaty system. He doesn't even like the system. Thus far, Bush has signed 6 treaties, the fewest of any president since the 5 signed during Reagan's first term. And none of the 6 treaties forwarded by Bush to the U.S. Senate for consideration has been ratified. More importantly, Bush has reversed U.S. support for at least 6 major treaties by 1. Ending U.S. involvement in the Kyoto Protocol on climate change. 2. Violating the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty by developing new nuclear weapons and negotiating a new pact with Russia that does not comply with its terms. 3. Pulling out of the negotiations for a verification protocol under the Convention on Biological and Toxin Weapons, effectively halting all further talks under this treaty. 4. Reversing a prior U.S. commitment to ratify the Landmine Convention of 2000 by 2006. What's next? 5. Withdrawing from the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty. 6. Nullifying the obligations of the U.S. signature on the International Criminal Court. And then it says Bush is the first president to nullify the United States signature from a multilateral treaty and the first leader of a major power to withdraw from a nuclear treaty after it became legally binding.
But the shoe lady says, oh, now you're not supposed to withdraw from treaties, Mr. Putin. Unfair, unfair, foul, red card for you, boy.
Good God. Well, I told you it was humor tonight. This is from Bill. Then we're going to take a break. Then we're going to do your phone calls. Bill in Paso Robles. I can't use half the words you've written here, Bill, because they're just so vile. Mike, the worst part of the meaningless cattle call of Democratic presidential candidates was the host, Brian Corporate blank blank Williams, who led off his litany of Republican scripted attack questions with Rudy Giuliani's filthy remark that the country would suffer more casualties at the hands of terrorists if a Democrat wins the presidency. Williams proceeded to fill the hollow, perverted, babbling contest with an endless procession of equally Republican-marinated sleazeball questions. It was sickening. Did I mention I hate Brian Williams? Even more so for his cute little waiting around during Katrina with the stupid NBC cameras glorifying his phony performance. Brian Williams is worse than the Fox wingnuts because he has a polished delivery. And there's a little more. Thanks, Bill. We'll be right back. Stay with us, Truth Seekers. I'm here to tell you, honey, that I'm bad to the bone. 21 past the hour. Let's do some phone calls here. Carl is calling from Chicago. Hey, Carl.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah, I haven't talked to you in a while.
Oh, is this Southside Carl?
Yeah.
Oh, you got to tell my man that. You got to say, hey, it's Southside
yeah,
Carl.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I had picked you up on the station here coming in the night, and I said, what is he doing on WCPT?
you picked me up. They're carrying it tonight?
Well, they go off the air at about 8:30.
Yeah.
So I caught the first 20 or 25 minutes.
Well, I'll be damned.
So I'm like, well, what's going on? I figured it out. But
that's your main man, Mike
yeah.
Moore. Here
yeah.
I am. So what's up? What's going
yeah,
on?
Yeah, well, you know, I told, you know, your screen, I was sort of like was going to correlate all this stuff that's going on right now, man.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff that, you know, your guest Steve that you had on and
right.
What I watched on Bill Moyers selling the war and
yes.
and all the stuff that's going on, Mike, it seems to be a case of just mass denial.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right.
And you know, for one thing, this has been frustrating me so much that well, I couldn't understand how so many people that really are educated, smart people, you know. That do, you know, do have some intelligence.
Right.
How they could be so dumb. And all I can, you know, only thing I can come up with is that it's a like a mass denial. It's sort of like, well, you know, if there was an event or something that no one ever, you know, could believe could ever happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually happens. Like, I don't think Americans actually believe that, well, someone could actually still won our presidential election.
Right.
I don't think they don't want. No, that could never happen.
Right.
No,
right. How's
you
that
know, it never happened.
Right. Right. And then when it does, it's too big.
But we don't want to believe it, even if it happens. Mm-hmm. You don't want to believe it. And that's what I'm, you know, how I see this mass denial. It's like, well, you just don't want to believe, you know, what's right there in your face. I think some of this started maybe for Bush and them. And they knew that they could get away with it was when they said that, well, we know he has the weapons. We know he's restarted his weapons program, and mm-hmm. we know where the weapons are at.
Right, right.
And then when came time and wasn't there anything, I think they were a little worried, but then they said, oh, well, it was bad intelligence, and everybody accepted it.
Yeah, everybody
you know,
did. And you know why everybody accepted it? I'll tell you why. Because folks in media, folks in the news gathering organizations, whether it was television or print, the Atlanta Journal or the Chicago Tribune, all let it happen. Never challenge a damn thing. Now, when you couple that with right-wing talk radio and the drumbeat for war, Carl, people like you and me and the other 200 million of us who are normal citizens never had a chance. We didn't have a chance.
Well, you know, I watched Washington Journal in the morning, and I called in when I have opportunities to respond to some of their questions on news items and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I forgot who it was that I had questioned, but I asked the guy, I said, well, wait a minute. Don't you know the difference between a definitive statement and one just an opinion. I mean, they didn't say, well, we believe, we feel, we think, we guess,
right.
it's likely,
right.
anything that could be. They made definitive statements.
Sure, sure.
A definitive statement is a statement of fact. That's like the sun rising, you know?
Yeah, Carl, you know, I'm glad you can laugh. I'm glad I can laugh. I'm glad that there's still somewhere inside of us something that goes, oh, my God, I got to laugh before I just claw my own eyes out or just go insane.
But the thing, though, is that, it's so pathetic that in a way it is funny, but it's also serious. It's one of the reasons why I haven't given the Democrats my only little $50.
Mm-hmm.
is a donation because they're in denial. They don't understand, well, how serious this is. You know, all the stuff that these guys done did, they set the stage that for some other guy to come along in the future. Hey, we can get away with it. Hey, we can get away with it.
I hear you, Carl. I hear you.
All right, Mike, you have a good night.
All right, man, you too. Have a good weekend. Don't be such a stranger. Take care.
Okay, Mike.
All right, we'll talk again. Take care. Take care. We got a break here. When we come back, more of your phone calls. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.
With Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. So surreal. Crossing this bridge. How could I feel about it? And what do I say? You walked alone.
It's 25 before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Norm is calling from Phoenix. Hey, Norm, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how are you tonight?
I'm doing fine. How
well,
are
actually,
you?
It sounds like you didn't get your nap today.
What? What's the giveaway?
You're a little cranky.
I'm a little cranky?
You're a little cranky.
Moi? But, cranky?
Yeah.
No.
Where's the humor? No. I kind of want to take you to the woodshed on the candidates debate from last night, but
sure, go ahead.
Well, before I do, I just, you know, just in case you tear my head off, I wanted to say something about the guest you had on tonight.
Yeah.
About that topic about Ohio with Steve.
Yes.
You know, the thing that strikes me about that is the comprehensiveness of this whole conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
The Karl Rove thing.
Sure.
And you know, for the people who hate you who are listening, doing their opposition research and stuff, I mean, these people, I really hope they do a little soul searching, because, you know, you think about it, how could something involve so many people, you know, this computer, this web company, this software company, that firm, these workers, there's so many people involved, and yet your guy Steve is trying to drag this information out, you know, it's mm-hmm. like, I think it's because, you know, the demonization of the left and Democrats has been so incredible, right? Paint the left, paint the Democrats as people who hate America.
This is what Limbaugh's primary function was?
Exactly, and he's not talk television. You were bagging on TV. He's radio, but
right.
Leave that aside for the moment. But, you know, this is the thing. It's almost like, why? How could these people do this? How could this happen? Well, if the enemy's that bad, if they're anti-American, then you're a true believer, then it's not only justified, it almost seems necessary to do these things to protect America. So
yeah.
I would hope that these people on the right would do a little reflecting and see how they've been worked around to the point where they don't really mind these things, and maybe even think it's a good thing, stealing elections, stealing democracy. You know,
I'm sure there's an element of that. A lot of them think that this is what they've been charged by their Redeemer, their God, to do, because after all, George is a godly man, and you know, we've got to go kill people and do things, make the pile high enough so that Jesus will come back. These, to me, there's a very, very, very disturbed people, and they're very, very, very much in positions of extreme power in this country.
Right. But they've got millions of followers who I really think, you know, I just hope they can think themselves into the light, because, I mean, Mike Malloy is a married guy with a little kid. Right? He's a homeowner. He's a this. We are all the same on the left and the right, 95% of our lives. And yet they've convinced, you know, in a way, and I don't want to trivialize the Holocaust or what happened to the Jews in Germany by a comparison, but the approach is very similar. They've hung little stars on the left. And you know, we're not Americans. We're not even people. We're something
well,
else. We're
right,
aliens.
But this is where I disagree with what you're saying, that the people on the right and the left are basically the same. We've been manipulated. No. People on the right honestly believe this garbage and crap.
Right.
And people on the left did not. People
but
on the right.
I'm just saying the lives we lead really are the same. We're not.
I've got to disagree with you again, because if the life I lead. You know, I may have a next door neighbor down the road here who owns a house like I do, that and does basically the same things
mm-hmm.
as I do, but he's a right winger and I'm a normal human being. He and I are entirely different because his life is permeated and soaked with the kind of lies and deceptions. So even though he may be paying a mortgage and I'm paying a mortgage, that doesn't mean that we share any common goals at all. I'm sorry, I just disagree.
I think we have to at least keep hope alive. That we can, that some of these people can come around, and you know that you can talk to your neighbor, and at some point, maybe help him to improve. But I just, you know, that's what struck me about it, is that this can go on because the demonization has been so complete, and it has been the talk radio, and it continues now. It's like Rush has the guys, and I listened to 5 or 10 minutes of Hannity just to check up on him in a day, and it's like he's got all the Christian moms, you know, they're all like Sean, and, you know, when you talk about the flying monkeys, this is. The poppy field, and they're like, please, I don't want to wake up. Don't make us wake up and see reality. And these guys keep throwing more, you know, poppies on them to keep the people, you know, keep them happy and sleeping in the field. But but on the thing last night, real quick, on the Democratic candidates thing,
right.
I agree with a lot of what you were saying, but of what there was really some good stuff to take away. And God, with apologies to Airplane, I was thinking, I picked the wrong year to stop smoking weed, because there were some priceless moments. For example, Dennis Kucinich calling out Hillary and Obama and Biden about, you know, them trying to have it both ways on the war.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a reaction shot where the camera cut to Hillary from the right to left, Hillary, Obama, and then Biden. And the look on all three of their faces as Kucinich, you know, was just basically saying that none of the emperors had any clothes. Was priceless. I mean, Hillary just looked like she wanted to, like, crumple him like a styrofoam cup, and just, she was just livid. But Kucinich took out a pocket version of the Constitution.
Right.
All right. Now, first of all, just think of the idea of Dennis Kucinich taking out a pocket anything. I mean, that right there was very ironic. But he made the point, he talked about impeaching Cheney. Moving to impeach Cheney about what the Constitution was and what these guys were doing to it. And I found it thrilling. It was like, it was the truth that we want to hear, you know, and it was right there.
Let me make one thing clear here. I'm not saying, Norm, that it might not have been good theater, that it might not have had its moments of high drama and low comedy. I'm sure it did. I'm saying, insofar as being a forum where people, undecided, let's assume the people who tuned in are watching
right.
eight potential candidates. What you talk about, what's the takeaway from that? The takeaway from that is nothing. The takeaway from it is Dennis Kucinich pulling out a pocket copy of the Constitution, which means nothing. It means absolutely nothing.
Mm-hmm. I think there is a takeaway. Let me get to Gravel here, because he stood up there and said, you know, the Iraq War was lost the second they made the decision to invade. And he went on. This guy just spoke nothing but truth. And
But wait. Who, with the sense of a gently stewed rhubarb stalk, doesn't already know that?
Surprisingly, many millions of Americans. But the takeaway is this.
But that's not a presidential moment to me. This tacky little talk show has been saying that for 4 years.
I'm just saying, I thought there was a constructive takeaway in the sense that what Kucinich did, and to a larger extent, no pun intended, by Gravel, was to show what a bunch of frauds, really, that the front runners are on the Democratic side. And I think it's, you know, we can't have politics as usual. Things are just too ugly here and in Iraq. And these guys were making the point that Hillary and Obama and John Edwards, that these guys are just kind of craven and just cowardly. It's like if it was a football game, they were kneeling on the ball, running out the clock, or running the ball into the line. They had nothing to offer. It was all playing defense. And the fact that these other two guys were there to explode that, I thought, is good and may help into the future. If they keep banging away at that, it's like we got to get The Democratic frontrunner is closer to reality.
All right, let me ask you this, based on what you just said. It's obvious that Denis Kucinich, his last attempt at the presidency, he never got, I was surprised he got invited to the debates. But let's take Gravel and Kucinich. Other than last night, when do you think will be the next time that these two will get the cameras in order to put out their beliefs where it concerns their wanting to be president? That's A. B. Do you think that anyone who is committed last night, who watched this, who's committed to Hillary or committed to Obama or committed to Edwards, do you think for a moment, honest answer here, that any kind of zingers handed out by Gravel and Kucinich will alter that Hillary supporter's thinking one iota?
Maybe not their thinking at the moment, but we're so far out from the election. The bottom line is those two guys were speaking truth that more and more people are going to understand with every passing day, week, and month. And by the
I hope that's the case.
You know,
But again, you know, a man much smarter than you and I said it years ago, the medium is the message, and television is a medium designed for forgetfulness, fraud, lies, and deceit. So anything, even whatever came out of Gravel and Kucinich last night has to be seen in that light. You know, when that famous statement was made, the medium is the message. You know, a lot of people, oh man, that sounds like a Zen cone. No, it doesn't. It's very simply understood. Television is a hideous medium. And for anyone to think, and with all due respect to you, Norm, that anything was accomplished last night by these eight people standing up there and having a total, what did each one have when you broke it down? 4 minutes, 5 minutes total? Let these people get out and hold live, honest debates with each other. One or two of them, go have a debate. That wasn't a debate last night. That was a show and tell. That was an example, a classic television moment of mine is bigger or shinier than yours. And to me, that's garbage, and it destroys the system. So I understand what you say, and you make a good argument. It just doesn't work for me. It just doesn't. And with that, I've got to go.
Hey, have a good weekend, Mike.
All right, Norm, you too. Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
There are ponies who are talking. There are wasters who read. There are people here who do not even own a TV. Everybody be careful. Oh, everybody be careful. Oh, everybody be careful.
Everything I know about my country, I learned on TV. The man on the screen tells me who is our enemy. They say that we are free and we must fight to be number one. So when the army calls, I'll grab my TV, my car, and my gun. And the TV God watches over me, opens up my eyes, shows me how to see all around the world every night.
Without question, and all too fast, leave the future in some other hands again.
It's about 10 before the hour. Go to afterdowningstreet.org. That's one of the many places you can go to get information, to get blank petitions. You can download them and print them off for to impeach these blood-soaked killers that are destroying the United States of America. Impeachment summer begins tomorrow. So the best way to do this, not the best way, but a way to do it, bring a stack of impeachment petitions, pens, clipboards, get people's names and contact information on the petitions. You know, remember Saul Alinsky, organize, organize, organize. Starts tomorrow. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered our program at KPCH in or KPHX. KPHX in Phoenix, our flagship station. He also answered your calls. Chris in Minnesota is our senior correspondent. Mark Marshall's our webmaster. Thanks to the moderators at MikeMalloy.com on the message board. The executive producer here is Catherine Bay. And, we've been playing some cuts tonight from Mark Marshall's CD, so check it out at MarkMarshall.com for more information. We were talking during the break that next Friday we're thinking about doing something that we've done, I think, three times since... Well, in my radio career, maybe we've done it seven or eight times, 10 times maybe, max, in 20-some years. But we're going to have another youth night next Friday. Next Friday. We'll start it when the program begins, and as long as it's self-sustaining, we'll go for the whole 3 hours. The rule is very simple. We only will take phone calls that night for people between the ages of 14 and 17, inclusive. If you're 14, 15, 16, 17, we want to hear from you. What we've done in the past with this is just allow young people to vent or make a point or raise an issue or whatever they want to do. But when we've done this before, it has proven to be a night of very interesting conversation. Now, what that means is next Friday we will not be loading up the program with a bunch of topics unless there's, you know, some wondrous event like Cheney resigning or something like that. But it'll be pretty much open topics when these young folks call in, because the idea is to get a sense of or a feel for where young people who may or may not listen to this program, where they really stand on some of these issues. And I'm always surprised at how many teenagers listen. And I know it's difficult or sometimes intimidating to call because of the nature of talk radio and the fact that, you know, I get pretty volatile and yada yada. But usually on Ute night, as we call it, I try to clean up my language and be a decent, nice man. So, and sometimes that works. So next Friday night, a week from tonight, Ute night, as the character in the movie. What was that movie, Kathy? My Cousin Vinny. Yeah, what a great flick. Ute night next Friday. Only calls from people between the ages of 14 and 17. And we also try to look for a real gender mix there. You know, male kids, female kids, gay kids, straight kids, black kids, white kids, kids that are actively religious or not. Whatever your point of view is. What I've noticed is very seldom do we get little conservative children to call in. I don't mean little conservative. I mean conservative teenagers. And that's fine. If this program is too intimidating for even teenagers who are of a conservative political bent, that's just the way it goes. But we do invite all of y'all to call in. Teenagers, kids, 14 to 17 next Friday night. Okay, we'll mention it again. And if you're an adult and you know somebody who is 14 to 17 who occasionally listens to the program or doesn't, you know, let them know and maybe get them to tune in for a night or two and then next Friday call in. Marge is calling from Indiana. Marge, hi. I've got about a minute and a half for you, dear heart.
Okay, I'll talk fast. I was listening to Bill Moyer's journal tonight, and he talked about the last go-around with Homeland Security law. Yeah. They snuck in a little clause about being able to bypass the advice and consent of Congress when they appoint prosecutors. You know, they fired all that bunch.
Yeah.
Well, they can appoint whoever they damn please, and they don't have to get anybody's okay.
That's right. That's right.
Oh, aren't they sweet?
Yeah, the recess appointment, well, that was written in the USA Patriot Act, you know, or did you just say that?
Yeah, well, Homeland Security, USA Patriot, whatever the hell they're calling it this
right,
week.
Right, yeah, whatever they're calling it. So that was slipped in there. That really makes a lot of sense, doesn't it, Marge, where it concerns Homeland Security?
Oh, yeah, right. These people, I swear.
Aren't they evil and ugly and hateful? Aren't they just...
My vocabulary has gone right down the toilet, you know, with each progressive year. I used to consider myself somewhat of a lady, but not anymore. You know, but there was one line that I got to share with you real quick before I forget.
Right.
I think they were referring to the Democrats while they were still in the minority, that they suffered from subpoena power. Or no, subpoena envy.
Subpoena envy.
I said that wrong.
Right,
I said that wrong.
That's all right, Marge. I think we all knew what you meant. Subpoena envy.
Jeez. Have a good weekend.
All right. You too, dear heart. Take care. That's Marge from Indiana, who is really Helen Thomas in disguise, but we refer to her as Marge to give her proper cover, and the only reason we blow her cover is just for the sheer hell of it. Well, if they could do Valerie Plame, we can do Marge, right? Huh? All right. That's about it from us. Is it time to start the music? We're about done, aren't we? We'll see you tomorrow. We'll see you Monday night, Truth Seeker. Have a great weekend, okay? We're going to go to the Inman Park Festival here in Atlanta this weekend. God, I love festivals in the spring and the summer. Take care. I'll see you Monday night. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are. Straight.